for a very special presentation, Debbie.
I can't reach the microphone. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to all. My name is Debbie and I am an alcoholic. Our fifth tradition states that our primary purpose is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Valley Group honors this tradition by rigorously searching for the finest recovery speakers in the Western Hemisphere so that they can share their experience, strength, and hope with us. Each week, we recognize one of these speakers for their service to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is now time to recognize Valley Group's Outstanding Speaker of the Week. This is very special for me, too, because I know this person. The nominee for this category has a sobriety date of January 25th, 2003. She has been continually in service. She was a secretary for Breath of Fresh Air meeting and as well as a sponsor. Her AA motto is one day at a time. So, may I have the envelope, please? The moment we've all been waiting for. The winner of the Outstanding Speaker of the Week award is Paige S. from Visalia. Give her a great welcome.
Wow, I've never won an award before, but Jesus, thank you. I didn't have to do anything. I'm Paige. I'm an alcoholic. Very nervous, so I'm going to do my best. Well, I'm going to start out by talking a little bit about where I started, my childhood. I grew up with a family that was chaotic most of the time. There was some abuse some of the time. And my mom had several husbands, several boyfriends. But I would think around the age 5 or 6, I was throwing myself into the chaos when I could and trying to take care of everybody, especially my mom. She had a boyfriend that was about to hit her one time, and I crawled right up into her lap to try and block him. I just had a strong, strong need all the time to protect, and it wasn't always the best thing for me. But anyways, there was a lot of chaos, and I grew up always being a very, very strong people pleaser, and my mom taught me that I needed to be pleasing and presentable and cute and funny and everything else that I could be to show that life was beautiful and there were no problems and we were all good. And so I worked on that, and I did that to the best of my ability. I learned how to become a liar pretty quick. And as I grew up, I was constantly uncomfortable in my skin. Constantly. Hated myself with a passion. Felt incredible insecurity always. And when I got into high school, I went out with some friends one night and I had a drink. And I can remember this drink and I can remember how it tasted and I can remember how I felt. And for the first time ever in my life, I suddenly just didn't care how I looked. I didn't care if I was fun or smart or cool or cute or anything. It just didn't matter. I was who I was and I was fine with that as long as I was drunk. And I ran with that feeling. I latched on to that pretty quickly. I wasn't too out of control during high school. I kind of eased my way into alcoholism, but when I graduated from high school, I went to COS, and then I moved on to Chico State. And that was just an incredible breeding ground for alcoholism. I actually turned 21 my first month there. Perfect. Not that I was waiting until I was 21 to drink, but, you know, it was just a nice kind of rite of passage to turn 21 in Chico. And my drinking definitely hit its height. And it was my first time out of my mom's home, and I felt more free than I ever had in my life, and I felt free to do anything I wanted that I never thought I would do. And I got into it pretty quick, and I found myself in places that I never thought I would be, and I woke up with people I never thought I would. And I had completely and totally thrown away any moral that I had even begun to grow up with. And I was not a fun drunk. I was fun in the beginning of the night. I sort of did a progression in my night's history. You know, I was fun, and then I would cry after a couple hours, and then I'd yell at you for some reason after a couple hours. And I was a fall-down drunk. It wasn't literally, and it wasn't if I would fall. It was how soon I was going to fall, and I'd get kicked out of bars because I'd fall down on the dance floor, and I liked it there, so I stayed. I thought they could dance around me. They got annoyed. They kicked me out. I was especially not fun, you know. I wasn't always the best of my friends. I was the kind of girl that one night I was outside the front of the bar, and I fell in the bushes. Normal. And my nice, very nice male friend came to try and pick me up, as they always did, and there were some cute guys in the parking lot that misconstrued this and thought that he had pushed me in and we were fighting. I liked that idea because they were cute, so I went with it. And I said that my friend was, you know, pushing me and they needed to help me. Yeah. Really great friend to have around. but I was not a fun drunk. School for me, I was there for school, but it was kind of a backdrop. It wasn't really the main thing that I did while I was there. But it was very easy to tell my parents how I was doing because they didn't get my report cards and they didn't really need to know. So I always told them that I was getting A's and B's and I was doing very well. And I was not. And it got to the point, to the year where I was supposed to be graduating. It was that time. And I was a senior. I was a native there. But I knew that I was not technically done and was not ready to graduate. But because I'm such a good liar and very, very afraid, I had to make this work. So, fortunately for me, if you're a senior, they kind of will let you sometimes walk through ceremony if they think you're going to officially graduate in the winter or whatever. So that worked out well for me. So I let everybody know I was graduating, and I invited everybody, and planned it all. And I got myself excited because I'm really good at kind of, you know, when you're so sick and you're so deep in your lives, you do, for me, I had to mentally get myself into that place where I could really pull off that this wasn't a lie. And so I went through graduation, and I had a big party, and I got lots of money and lots of gifts. And congratulations, you did it, I know. I made it. It was rough, but I did it. And I played it up. And that was that. And I did get a letter a few weeks after that that I was disqualified from the university because I had a 1.5 GPA. And I'd been on academic probation for 2 years, and they weren't going to do it anymore. So, but we weren't sharing that. My next move was graduate school, because that's what was expected of me to do next. So it was graduate school. So I was in graduate school. And they weren't in Chico. What did they know, you know? I decided to take a break after a semester. I wanted to go on sabbatical. So we decided to take a break from graduate school, and I applied to become a mental health counselor. And I got the job. It worked out well for me because the lady that hired me was best friends with the lady I was a live-in nanny for, and she was at my graduation, so she didn't need to see the diploma. She knew I had a BA. So that worked out nice. I enjoyed being a mental health counselor. It was truly what I wanted to do. I don't think that I was the right person for the job technically, but it was what I wanted to do. Through all this, yeah, my drinking continued, and I can go into a big drunkalogue, but it just got to the point as time went on that I wasn't really going out and drinking anymore. I was really to the point where I just wanted to sleep, or I just wanted to hide, and going out and being with people had no interest to me, really. That hate for myself wasn't going away, and it was only getting deeper, and alcohol was my best friend, and it was what I felt I could run to, and I didn't need to worry about pleasing it, and I didn't need to worry about whether I was lying to it. It did for me what I wanted. And I decided that Chico wasn't working for me anymore, and I did a geographic, and I moved back here. I didn't come back with a plan. I didn't have a job. I didn't have a home. I didn't have anything, you know, really to come to. So I moved in with my mom. And got to go through a lot of anxiety every time she was setting up interviews for me for jobs where you were supposed to have a BA degree. And I would have these constant panic attacks every time she found a job that she felt would be right for me. And figuring out how I was going to get out of that, because I still wasn't telling her the truth. I always found my way out of it. So I pretty much stayed at home at her house every day, and my drinking got worse, and I went into a really deep depression where I just pretty much gave up showering or going places or eating much. And after a while, my mom got to a point, and this was actually shocking to me because, you know, growing up, we didn't tell people any secrets, and we didn't go to therapists, and we didn't say that anything was wrong. And I wasn't really encouraged to share my emotions unless they were happy. So I was shocked when my mom did decide that I should go see a therapist. And so I finally did, and I got diagnosed with bipolar disorder, which I was quite angry about that, because I felt that I had worked with people who had bipolar when I was a mental health counselor, and that I was not that. Yeah, the doctor, when he diagnosed me, he gave me a free book, Bipolar Disorder, and I asked him, I said, why are you giving me that? Do you think they have some traits that are like it? He said, no, I think you have it, but good luck. Take it, read it. I went ahead and got on meds, and after a while, I didn't stop drinking with the meds. That made my nights even better for me. I finally moved out, got an apartment, got a real job, and I had another doctor encourage me to go to AA. He felt I was an alcoholic, which also pissed me off. I felt that my stepdad was an alcoholic, and that was the only picture of alcoholism that I really felt I had. And I hadn't ever technically lost a job, and I hadn't ever gotten a DUI, although I very much should have. And I didn't have all the things happen that I thought made you an alcoholic. And so I was very resentful about that, and I refused to admit that. But I'm a people pleaser. And so I decided to please some people by going to a meeting. And I went to a meeting, and there was a friend that I'd known for a long time. He'd been in AA for a while, and he had introduced me to a lady that could possibly be my sponsor. And she and I talked on the phone, and she started listing all this stuff for me to do. Read the book and read this many pages, and then write this out, and then do this. And I'm like, okay, sure. Goodbye. No, I don't think so. So I ignored that. But for whatever reason, I decided to keep going. And like I said, I didn't stop drinking. But I decided to go. And, you know, it's funny because I at meetings now, I'm always baffled by newcomers that they come in and they sit in the back and they don't want to talk. They're scared to share. I took a different approach. I now have fear. I had no fear of talking, you know. Spent my life trying to, like I said, trying to be charming and fun and all this stuff. It doesn't mean that I was, but I was trying to be. And I had a lot of stuff that I wanted you to feel sorry for me for. I was a professional victim, very, very comfortable with that role. I was as addicted to chaos as I was to alcoholism, and I felt safe, and I felt like I knew what to do, like I knew how to be when I was inside chaos. So when things were calm or quiet, I didn't like that. I had to make something happen. Whether I did something to myself or got involved with someone else's problem, I needed that attention. I really did. I felt that, and bipolar for me was, ended up being another crutch for me. It ended up being something that I thought, okay, this is something that, you know, for me, like that's something to feel sorry about. You know, you can't blame me for this or this or that because I have this disorder. It was really something that I grabbed onto and tried to be a victim over as well. So I ended up, but yeah, when I went to meetings, I shared, and I got up and shared, and I wasn't always telling stuff that I needed to be talking about or that was the truth, but I shared. And I was always that annoying person that when the chairperson is actually up here sharing, you know, I'm motioning to them. Because, you know, I just thought, well, if they call on me, then I didn't ask, you know. Good Lord. And then when the burning desire came at the end of the meeting, sometimes I shared again. Because I thought of something else that needed to be said. I really kind of nauseate myself when I think about it. Like I said, I didn't shut up. And I was a smart ass. And trying to be funny isn't charming all the time. And you know, I had a lady, I was at the Alana Club, and I was sharing, and I was saying something that was probably a bunch of crap. And she stood straight up in the meeting and said, "That's why you're going to relapse." And I didn't have anything charming or funny to say to that. I turned around and I ran, tail between my legs. I felt totally embarrassed. I knew she was right. And I thought about not coming back. I really didn't like being told the truth, especially the brutal truth. I went through a cycle when I first came into the program, and I would try this thing, and I would try to not drink, and it would work for a few months. And then I would relapse, and I'd have a breakdown, and I'd go into the psych ward, and then I'd come out, and I would try again, and I would go through the same cycle. And I did that same cycle for about 2 years. Same old stuff. You could have predicted it. I just didn't really want to get better. And I didn't want to be honest or have you really, really know me. Because I was so sure if you really knew me anyways, you would want nothing to do with me. So all of my little funny and charming and all this stuff was just because I wanted so badly to try and be who I thought I was supposed to be. And it was a lonely place to be. And in doing that, I alienated myself, and I annoyed many people on this program. Many. Most were okay with telling me that. And there were some that stuck by and didn't leave, and they knew what I was doing, and they could see through it. And They knew things were still possible for me. They could see what I couldn't see. I had to get to that place where I was just so humiliated and lonely and realizing that I'm running out of options and everything I'm doing is not working. So why not try it different? And one day in a psych ward, when I was laying there, my best friend in the program, she was visiting with me and she looked at me and I told her, I said, I'm done. I'm done. I'm tired. I don't want to put on this act anymore. It's not working. I'm miserable. All I want to do is die. I take that back. I didn't at that point, but through that time, all I wanted to do was die. I thought of ways to kill myself constantly. I had attempted it a couple times. I'd wake up in the morning and just be so angry that I was awake. I didn't want to do this life. I just didn't know how. And so I'd made that decision, and I told her, you know, I think I'm going to try it differently. I'm going to do this thing a little different. It seems to be working for a whole lot of people, so maybe try the other way. And I decided to finally shut up, and I didn't ask to share, and I wasn't the burning desire. And I know there'd be a couple people that they actually said to me, Paige, are you okay? Like, yeah. I'm trying to be. I don't want to share because I don't have anything that I need to be saying. I need to be listening. There's a whole lot of stuff that people need to say that I need to pay attention to. So I sat and I humbled myself and I admitted that I had no idea what I was doing, that I was doing it all wrong. I celebrated my first 1 year sobriety birthday in the program was as honest as my graduation from Chico. You know, I was used to it. I thought I had to have a year, and I had no interest again in sharing that wasn't the truth. And I was just tired of lying, just tired of it. So I became teachable, and I listened to what people had to say, and I accepted the fact that I was a little intolerable, I still wasn't sure I knew who to be. Because the insecurities were all still there. They haven't gone away. But I was working on it. But, you know, you gain a lot more peace when you stop trying to be somebody else. And I stopped letting alcohol be the way to cope. And I stopped letting bipolar be the thing I ran to with a bunch of meds to run from too. I am not saying that those medications, some of them weren't valid and that I need them, but I stopped taking the ones that got me as messed up as alcohol did. For 9.5 years, it's been going pretty well. I've had 2 major health scares. I've had brain surgery. I've had skin cancer. And I realized going through those that they weren't reasons to drink. You know, it took nothing for me to feel there was a reason to drink before. And in doing this program and reading that book and getting God in my life, who's my higher power, and surrendering to Him every day, and asking Him to guide me, and listening to you, and trying to do this thing, I learned tools. And I learned that There's just nothing that I can justify drinking over. Nothing that can justify me being that person that I hate. I've decided to go back to school. since 1998 that I had my fake graduation, and last semester I went back to COS. I decided I want to have a real graduation and get a real degree. Scared to death. It's hard, but I'm so excited to be doing it. And I tell you what, when I have that real graduation, everybody's invited. I don't care. I'm just gonna be so excited. This is all about me. Obviously, you all want to be there. I'm joking. I know you don't, but I'm excited to be doing these things today. I'm excited that I can have a functional relationship. I'm not craving chaos every day. I'm not looking for things to go wrong or ways that I can act up to get your attention to see if you really care about me. I just do this thing to the best of my ability, and I've had times in these over the years where I have stopped going to meetings, you know, on a normal basis, and I've kind of fallen away from it and didn't drink, but I got complacent, and I thought, you know, I'm doing good. I've got this thing. But it didn't fail that I would always get to a point where I wasn't spiritually where I wanted to be, and I didn't have the joy that I knew I could have. And I reminded myself, you know, I had to realize that the reason I have the things in my life today that are working for me are because I started coming to these meetings, and because I was doing this program, and because I was having a God in my life. And for me to turn my back on that and think, oh, okay, well, you got me as far as I need, and I can do this now, it's going to get me in trouble quick. I know what got me here. I'm grateful for it. I appreciate it. I grab onto it. I've met people that, you know, some do the program only and, you know, aren't into church, and some do church and feel that's enough for them and they don't do the program. I grab onto everything. That's just my personal thing. I need a lot of help, and I take everything that I can get. And I'm not afraid to say that I haven't done it perfect and that I still don't make mistakes all the time. I'm not going to try and act like I'm perfect. I'm not going to try and convince you that I am. I know I'm not. I'm learning every day. I'm trying. I use the tools I've been taught. I read that book. I work with my sponsor. I go to meetings. I pray. I surrender multiple times a day. I lost my train. Knew that was going to happen. Like I said, some of those insecurities and things that I deal with are still there. I still work through them every day. But the difference is all that stuff isn't as overpowering as it used to be. It's not controlling my life. It's not controlling me. I don't have to drink over it. I don't have to hide from who I am. I can just deal with them and work through it. I'm grateful to be able to work through things today. You know, they don't have to put my life into shambles because something goes wrong. I'm learning to like who I am. You know, I'm not disgusted. I don't necessarily love myself, but I like myself a little bit. I'm proud of who I am today. I'm proud that I'm teachable, and that I'm doing this thing one day at a time. And I'm I'm honored. I mean, to even be asked to come up and share, that's to actually have them want you to share now. Compared to getting annoyed when they see that you're coming up again and sharing, it's a good feeling. It's a good feeling. And so I'm just so incredibly grateful to be here, and grateful for life today, grateful I've gotten as far as I have, and that I'm continuing to keep moving forward, and I'm excited about the future. I did tell my family that I didn't graduate in 2003 when I was doing amends. They weren't happy, but we worked through it. We worked through it, and so they're excited I'm back in school now. So, anyways, that is all I have. Thank you so much for listening.
We have a few minutes left here, and we will now take questions from the audience that you might have from our speaker. So anybody that has a question, if you would stand up and direct your question up here to the podium, and our speaker would be happy to answer them.
No, I didn't, and I don't even remember what I got now. That's kind of sad. How was I in school? When I really decided that I wanted to do school and put my mind to an assignment, I did great. Was I intoxicated? Is that what you said? While I was doing work? Sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes.
Did you make amends to other people that gave you gifts besides your family? I don't know if you heard that or not.
No, I didn't. And that, like I said, that unfortunately is actually because I don't remember who or what I got the gifts from. So I would be happy to be honest with them and tell them I the truth is I don't remember what I got or who I got it from. Chico State. Well, I'm hoping to transfer to Fresno State next semester. I couldn't get into a four-year university yet because my GPA was so low. So I needed to start out small again and get my GPA up. And I want to get a degree in social work. Congratulations. I commend you. Congratulations, my boss. Awesome. Wow. Do you have people in your life that you really trust? Are you sharing with them the truth of how you're feeling? I'll tell you that not only haven't God in my life, but that truly, without question, if I didn't have the support system that I had, I probably wouldn't have survived. I had to have a few people that I knew I could go to, that I could say anything to, and that I knew were really going to be there, and that believed in me and lifted me up. I needed that. And that has been a huge saving grace in my life. You're welcome. So I would try and open up to a couple people. Yeah. I'm very powerless over alcohol, without question. And you said, why am I sober today? I'm sober today because I'm making a choice not to drink. I'm going to meetings. I'm talking to my sponsor. I'm reading the book. Like I said, I surrender every day. I know I'm powerless. There is no question in my mind, and I wouldn't begin to say I wasn't. And beyond all that, I make a choice every day, and my choice is to not drink. I don't want to go back to that. And, you know, one thing I realized is that when I got in enough pain, things changed. I had to be in enough pain. And whatever that pain threshold is for somebody, that's up to them. I had to get into enough pain for me to want to change. So, yeah. 37. I got diagnosed in 2001. I was really bad about the, so that was 11 years ago. I was 26. I still take medication. I don't take ones like Ambien or Xanax, things like that, that I could get addicted to. I'm so sorry. I have trouble hearing. What? It was in 2001. What did he say? Oh. Is that it?
Thank you, thank you.
Thank you, Paige, and also thanks to all of our members that had some questions.